You are listening to the Cycling Podcast, at the Tour de France in association with Rafa, the fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam. Stage 20, today we're in Val Thorens.
Se negan Bernal Alvarito Pachón, te recuerdo ahora. ¡Qué etapa, señores! ¡Y qué tour! ¡Campeón del Tour de Francia! ¡Colombia! ¡Egan! ¡Colombia! ¡Egan! ¡Qué felicidad! ¡Qué abrazo! ¡Qué estímulo! ¡Qué grandioso! ¡Qué abrazo! ¡El país Egan te abraza! ¡Colombia! ¡País sufrido latinoamericano! Aquí nos tenemos que olvidar de tantas guerras, de tanto narcotráfico, de tantas bombas. Hoy Colombia goza a un estilo diferente que se llama Egan Bernal. Esto pasa, Tour de Francia en el bolsillo. Egan, te amo, eres un campeón, Egan. Te amamos en Colombia. Cada centímetro vive la victoria del colombiano Egan Bernal. Extraordinario lo que ha sucedido hoy. Se me escapa la voz, se me revienta el corazón. ¡Qué victoria, señores! Egan Bernal, campeonísimo. Dios, dame fuerza. Dios, sácame adelante. La voz no me puede fallar en un instante tan importante. Dame fuerzas. Egan, campeón. Colombia te ama, Egan. Colombia te ama. Abrazo de todo el país en cada rincón. Colombia, campeón del Tour de Francia, señores.
Well, we were played in there by some radio commentary from a Colombian journalist who does that every day at the finish line. There are three Colombian broadcasters who talk through the closing stages of the stage with all their colleagues around them, and I stood beside him recording it. Incredible. You don't need to speak Spanish to get the passion. I hadn't heard passion like that. Very reminiscent of when Geraint Thomas won the Tour de France last year and Lionel delivered a similar... monologue for Welsh radio.
I have a strange anecdote about Colombian radio broadcaster in the 1980s when you were trying to file a story, you needed a carrier on the telephone to be able to send your story through a computer with an acoustic coupler. And one day I was sitting near the Colombian radio journalist. He was screaming so loudly that actually the acoustic coupler mistook his screams for the carrier, and the story went without me doing anything. So there you are. I mean, that such is the passion for cycling in Colombia.
Well, it's amazing, isn't it? And as you could hear in the audio there, he was very tearful towards the end. And it was very touching because he really broke down once he'd finished broadcasting, and quite a few journalists sort of consoled him and put their arms around him. He didn't need consoled, he was happy. I mean, but he was also overcome with the emotion of Egan Bernal crossing the line and confirming, barring disaster, that he will become the first Colombian ever to win the Tour de France. And we're going to talk about that tonight because we haven't. It's sneaked up on us, hasn't it, really?
It kind of has, yeah. I'd just like to point out that I didn't deliver a soliloquy like that when Geraint Thomas won the Tour. And there is a cultural difference, isn't there, between the Colombian journalists who come and cover the race. They really allow their patriotism for their riders to come through. And it is entertaining. It's a different job, I guess, on Colombian radio. That's what their audience will be expecting. So, yeah, I mean, fair... What an afternoon for them. I mean, they've been waiting for this for really since they first came over to the Tour de France in in 1985, or the predecessors of the guys working on the race now.
Well, 84, wasn't it? 84, the Herrera.
In 83, actually.
Lucho Herrera. I think 83, yeah. They rode the tour, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 83, they first came over as a team. 84 and 85, they were getting gradually better.
Herrera won Abdeaz 84, and then he won the Vuelta in 87.
Yeah, the first two breakthrough riders were Luis Herrera and Fabio Parra. Herrera was, they were 7th and 8th in 85 and 5th and 6th in 87, and then Parra was the first Colombian to get on the podium when he finished 3rd behind Pedro Delgado and Stephen Rooks in 1988. And then there was only Alvaro Mejia in 93, Hernan Buenahora was 10th in 95, and then Santiago Botero at the start of this millennium. He was 4th in 2002, before Nairo Quintana looked like being the first Colombian to win the Tour de France. If you'd had to have said a few years ago, who will be the first Colombian to win the Tour, you would have said Quintana, because he'd won the Giro and he'd won the Vuelta.
Twice on the podium.
And been on the podium, second twice and third once. Rigoberto Urán, of course, second in 2 years ago. He was in contention, wasn't he? But I don't know whether we thought he was a really serious contender. But you say, Rich, it snuck up on us. But back in Brussels, we were talking about who would be the pre-race favourite. And I think we all kind of thought Egan Bernal would be. Certainly after our event in Brussels, when Jonathan Vaughters was very firmly in Bernal's corner in terms of saying he thought that Bernal would win the Tour.
Yeah, it snuck up on us in the sense that there have been so many big storylines the last couple of days, that Bernal getting in yellow and be also the youngest post-war winner of the Tour. These stories have been overshadowed a little bit by the weather and the shortened stages, and today's shortened stage again with just the one climb up to the finish. So there's been lots going on, and I think over time when the dust settles, we'll talk a lot more about Bernal. We haven't had an opportunity as journalists either to, really get to know him as the yellow jersey wearer, which often happens over the course of the tour, because tonight was his first sort of leader's press conference. We know him well. He's a bright guy, speaks several languages. He's very fluent, very articulate, and spoke very well, came across very well when he spoke to us tonight after the stage. But Lionel, have you got the tale of the attack, please?
Certainly have. Stage 20, the penultimate stage, from Albertville to Val Thorens. As we said last night, the stage was cut short from 131 kilometres to 59 kilometres because of more landslides. So that meant they came the most direct way and they cut out the climbs, including the Corme de Roseland. Only the second time the Tour de France has had a stage finish here. The last time was in 1994, and a Colombian won that stage that day, Nelson Rodriguez. And we wondered on our way up whether that would be an omen for the Tour. There was speculation a bit earlier in the day, because the weather had been pretty terrible this morning, speculation that the stage might even be cut by another 11 kilometres and finish a bit further down the hill. But fortunately, it brightened up, it dried up, and it was a nice looking stage in the end. The break was a big one, contained a lot of familiar names, and it was really only once it broke down to five riders that...
Lionel, you're being, getting clapped for your tale.
This is wonderful stuff.
Tab, as
wonderful.
You go, this is the first time.
Wait till outside the team bus when they'll start booing. Anyway, the riders that went off the front of the break were Vincenzo Nibali, Ilnur Zakarin, Tony Galopin, Mike Woods and Pierre-Luc Perrichon. And they were going well. They didn't have a lot of road to make time, so they never really got more than a couple of minutes, and the big question was, would that be enough? Just a quick word on Mike Woods, because this is the fourth day in a row that he's got in the break in the mountain stages. Really impressive for a guy who's riding with a couple of cracked ribs. Jumbo-Visma set the pace on the front of the main group, and that whittled it down pretty quickly. First George Bennett and then Laurens De Ploes, and that eventually cracked Julian Alaphilippe. He slowed down quite dramatically with about 13 kilometres to go. He did kind of gather himself and recover a bit, had a bit of help from Enric Mas. Up at the front, Vincenzo Nibali pushed on. Mike Woods tried to go across to him, almost made it, but then came to a bit of a standstill, and that meant Nibali went away and held on to win the stage. His first race victory since Milan Sanremo last March, and his first Tour de France stage win since 2015. Behind, there wasn't a great deal.
Sorry. No, I'm just that's my brain whirring, Ryan. I'm just thinking, did Nibali not win a stage of the Giro? I guess no.
First Tour de France stage win.
Oh, sorry.
Since 2015.
Yeah, no, but you said first win since Milan Sanremo last
first,
year.
His first race win since yeah, Milan no, Sanremo
I,
last year.
I,
yeah.
I'm just, I was trying to think compute, if he won a stage. No, no, carry on.
He said it himself. It was his first
don't
win
mind
since.
Me. Yeah. Well, he would know.
Anyway, Jumbo-Visma's work paid off. They managed to hoist Steven Kruiswijk onto the podium. But we now know Egan Bernal will win his first Tour de France in Paris tomorrow. Geraint Thomas, his Ineos teammate, has moved up to second. Kruiswijk is up to third. Alaphilippe drops to fifth. Still a fantastic result for him. Romain Bardet held on to the King of the Mountains jersey simply because Bernal didn't win the stage. Peter Sagan will win his record seventh green jersey in Paris tomorrow, although his points tally is quite down on previous years. But that means seven wins in 8 years for Team Sky / Team Ineos, and with four different riders. Wiggins, four for Chris Froome, and Geraint Thomas, and now Egan Bernal. So now we just go up to Paris tomorrow for the sprint finish on the Champs-Élysées.
The fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and Watch with Rafa in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam.
Thank you to our headline sponsor, Rafa. Very, very grateful to them for their support as ever. And I went to the finish armed with a Pedler de Charme t-shirt, one of the cycling podcast range available at rafa.cc, to present to Marcus Burghardt, who we decided, he was second in our poll to find the final week Pedler de Charme, but we decided that he deserved one. So the cycling podcast jury took it upon themselves to award Marcus Burghardt the Pedler de Charme t-shirt. We'll try and get Julian Alaphilippe his t-shirt tomorrow on the Champs-Élysées. Wish us luck with that. Just before we go on with tonight's show, something we've mentioned a couple of times, we're doing a tour in November of venues throughout the UK and Ireland. Our grand tour is being announced in phases. We've got a few venues confirmed and tickets on sale. At Cardiff, St David's Hall, Tuesday the 12th of November. Belfast MAC on Friday the 15th of November. The Leicester Y Theatre on Thursday the 28th of November. The Arts Theatre in London on the 18th and the 25th of November. The Manchester Royal Northern College of Music on the 30th of November. That's a Saturday. You can get tickets at thecyclingpodcast.com. If you go to the live events tab down the side, click on that, you'll be able to get tickets there. Great to hear from some of you that you've got tickets already. Look forward to seeing you there. We're also doing an event in Harrogate at the World Championships on the Friday of World Championship Week, and we're really looking forward to that as well. So lots to look forward to. But a final day in Paris to look forward to as well. And, well, Egan Bernal is the youngest post-war winner of the Tour de France, the first Colombian winner of the Tour de France. And it's quite a story. And he spoke at the finish about having his girlfriend here, his family, his father. He said that when he's at home in Colombia, his father goes with him on the motorbike for every training ride he does. So his father is the only person, he said, who really knows, you know, what he does, the kilometers that he covers on the bike. And, you know, he's a young guy, but he speaks with a kind of an openness, and he's an interesting guy. And I think we're set to get some good stuff out of Egan Bernal, because I think the Bernal period. Oh, there's Marcus Burghardt, our Pedler de Charme, sitting at the next table. He's not wearing his t-shirt, unfortunately, unless it's underneath that tracksuit top. But anyway, but yeah, Bernal is set to be, well, he's somebody we're going to be talking about a lot, aren't we, over the next few years?
Yeah, well, I mean, we have to admit, I must, you know, go back to the last year's tour, when I said I was a little bit worried about the way Team Sky were using Bernal as a domestic at such a young age in the mountains at 21. And I was telling myself that there's either they're wearing him out too early, or he's such a talent that, you know, they think he's a guy who can, you know, win the tour at the age of 22 and go on for quite a while. The only little, hint of a doubt there is, remember, we thought the same thing about Quintana, we thought the same thing about Jan Ulrich. There's a number of young up and coming riders we believed would win at least five Tours de France, and in the end it didn't happen. I hope, you know, that Egan Bernal, and given his charisma, given his personality, given the way he rides, you think he's not the kind to kind of, you know, go the wrong way or indulge into dodgy contracts or business problems when are things that happen from time to time. But the only risk there is there are other up and coming riders, you know, coming. What would happen in a tour with Egan Bernal, Chris Froome, Tom Dumoulin, Primoz Roglic? We don't know for now. So, but anyway, for him, it will stay forever. The first Colombian to win the Tour de France, as such, at 22, he's actually the youngest ever holder of the yellow jersey, because the only younger tour winner, won the tour before the yellow jersey existed. So, I mean, he's made a big step into the tour history today, and just for that, I mean, well, plaudits.
I mean, he's had a great season, hasn't he? He won Paris-Nice back in the spring. He was supposed to be going to the Giro d'Italia, and we were speculating about, you know, how much Team Sky needed a result in the Giro d'Italia in their search for a new sponsor. And then, of course, Ineos came along and secured the future of the team. And all of a sudden, there was this question about how would Ineos use their resources for the Grand Tours. And, well, Bernal crashed in training before the Giro and fractured his collarbone and was out of action for a while. Came back, won the Tour of Switzerland, which wasn't against a great depth of opposition, to be perfectly frank. I mean, he looked good, but he didn't look like, you know, he wasn't tearing it up. And here at this Tour de France, you know, he's ridden the long game. He's ridden a 3-week race, whereas everyone else really has ridden a two and a half week race. And Stephen Krausreich has ridden a 3-week race as well, but hasn't got that higher end that Bernal showed.
The one question I have, I guess, is a big surprise to me, and I think lots of people last week in the Pyrenees, was that Thibaut Pinot was climbing better than Bernal in the Pyrenees and dropped him. And had Pinot not suffered the injury that he suffered this week, how would he have got on in the Alps against Bernal? Because it was, you know, Bernal claimed that time in the crosswind stage over Pinot, but Pinot was coming back and looking good, and a fully fit Pino in the sort of form he was in last weekend, how would he have got on against Bernal?
The what ifs are always, you know, difficult to discuss, but I agree, and I think even Geraint Thomas admitted that this was an exciting tour because it was more open, and that maybe Team Ineos, the domination was not, you know, as blatant as in the past, which forced them actually to change their approach of the tour, which is very interesting. I think you spoke to a number of people at Team Ineos who just, you know, explain that. But yes, maybe while Egan Bernal is blooming, maybe maybe the end of the Team Ineos domination is nearing, because we see that the Jumbo-Visma, whether it's Roglic or Kruijswijk, are nearing. We saw that Thibaut Pinot, without his injury, would obviously have been a contender. We see the strengths of the iconic Quickstep for years now, and some, you know, rider might emerge from there. So, you know, it might be, in a way, this victory might be, you know, it seems like, you know, seventh victory in eight tours for Team Sky or Team Ineos, but maybe in spite of all the brilliance of the win, well, it might also be the beginning of the end.
No chance. I mean, okay, Chris Froome, we don't know how he'll come back from his current injury, although they're very encouraged by his rehabilitation so far. Geraint Thomas is, approaching mid-30s as well, not quite as old as Chris Froome. But, I mean, Team Ineos are not suddenly going to melt away. I mean,
no,
it might be a small rebuild.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that the others are coming near. I'm saying Bernal, from what we saw in the mountains, Bernal might not be better than Roglic or Pinot at present. He won, okay, but and the depth of the other teams, I mean, Jumbo-Visma, even Groupama FDJ, and a number of other ones, is such. I mean, Movistar again, we'll have to discuss a little bit what they were trying to do today. Again, we saw them. I mean, their teamwork was magic. You know, Landa attacking on the on on the final climb to go for God knows what. I mean, the stage was lost, and then on the line, Valverde beating his teammate, you know, in the last 100 meters. I mean, once again, great harmony in that team. But apart from that, I sense, you know, kind of leveling of the field in terms of teams.
I mean, it's worth saying as well that they've won the Tour de France, but they've had a pretty dreadful season, Team Ineos, in terms of results. They really haven't done an awful lot. Bernal has saved them a bit, and Wout Poels might be moving on. He's been below par here. Michał Kwiatkowski has been below par. Jenny Moscon, not really sure what he's done here. He may well have done a lot of work for the team that we don't necessarily see. But Geraint Thomas spoke in his press conference there about believing he can come back to the Tour and win it again. Now, Chris Froome, meanwhile, is tweeting Thibaut Pinot about seeing him at the start next year, and he's very gung-ho about that. That is not gonna work. I'm sorry, they're not gonna be able to come here next year with three leaders.
The last three winners.
So they're gonna have to. There's gonna have to be difficult decisions made. Yeah. Geraint Thomas is a team man, and it strikes me that he will accept. Is he more likely to accept a team role if that's what the team feels is his rightful place in the pecking order? Chris Froome is different, and I don't see him coming back to Tours to work for Egan Bernal. It's worth saying about Geraint Thomas, though, as well. I think that he's finished second here in the Tour, and if you remove his victory last year, he's never finished in the top 10 of a Grand Tour other than his win last year. So to back that up with second this year, I think it's very, very impressive and a great. Yeah, I he was asked were there any difficult moments. He said, sorry, were there moments where he doubted whether he could, you know, win this Tour or be competitive? And he said, yeah, first started having doubts last November. I think it's been a real challenge for him to get here in the sort of shape he's in, and it's testament to the work he's done that he's been so strong at this Tour, if not as strong as last year.
I think, just picking up on Francois' point, it's been a real snakes and ladders Tour de France. There've been people going forward and going back. If you think about it, Kruijswijk and Buchmann are the real steady eddies, and they're kind of the baseline, really. Everyone else has kind of gone above and below and above and below. You know, Pinot lost time in the crosswinds. Bernal had a shocker in the time trial. Geraint Thomas faltered a bit in the early mountain stages. Julian Alaphilippe streaked ahead after rolling six after six and avoiding all of the snakes and seemingly finding all of the ladders. But in the end, you know, Bernal's consistency over 3 weeks is what has what has won him the Tour, and in particular the fact that they he's managed to remain strong in the final week. Geraint Thomas spoke to a few journalists at the finish. Let's hear first what he had to say about Team Ineos' approach to the Tour de France, and then from Tim Kerrison, the head of athlete performance at Team Ineos, who has, in his way, masterminded 7 out of 8 Tour de France victories with 4 different riders.
I managed to get here in this shape I did and gave everything in the race, and for one reason or another it didn't quite happen, but the fact that we still win with Egan is amazing. No, I think there's no egos in the team. I think, you know, we know how to win this race, and I don't know, when you have success and you get it the next year and the year after that, you just have that inner belief and you all know how to ride and how to win, and we just come here with one goal, always one goal, and that's just to win the yellow jersey, and stages don't matter, breakaways don't matter, you know, green, polka dot, red number, you know, team classement, like nothing matters other than winning the race overall, and I think that's the main thing. I just want to go and enjoy tomorrow with my friends and my wife, and I mean, next year, worry about that in a few months' time.
7 wins in 8 years with 4 different riders, how does this compare?
I think they've all been different, but the this one certainly, you know, we played the long game, or we had to play the long game, and you know, we didn't get into this position, or we didn't get into the yellow jersey until yesterday, and we didn't get into first and second until today. So it feels like it's been a long build, a crescendo, and actually, you know, for a lot of those other races, we took the jersey very early and then had, you know, 2 weeks or thereabouts of defending, and it was fun to do it a different way. You know, it was fun. It was challenging. You know, certainly Alaphilippe created a challenge that that surprised everyone, really, how long he hung on to the lead. There were weather conditions to deal with yesterday and today, which affected the course, I guess, but probably not the outcome in the end. So yeah, and then first and second on the podium we haven't done since the first time we won the Tour in 2012. So it's been a fantastic race, and to have another winner, a new winner, our first non-British winner. We obviously got a huge fan base, even bigger now in Colombia, and he's I think I heard just now the youngest Tour winner post-war. So he's got a huge future ahead, and it's very exciting for the team.
Do you think we're going to see an age of Bernal now?
Well, he's only 22 years old, and he's only getting better. So, you know, he's with us for a few more years to come, and we're certainly going to do our best to keep him on the top step of the podium.
And how do you balance having the three past Tour de France champions in the same team next year?
It's the same, you know, we've had for quite a few years now, the challenge of having multiple great strong leaders, and as we'll manage it as we have every other year. Chris is certainly very, very, you know he's doing an amazing job with this rehab, and he's very determined to be back and to have a crack at his fifth Tour next year. You know, it's a fantastic asset to have, really, as a team, to have such strong leaders, and we'll tackle that next year.
Psychologically, it must be different chasing and not defending the jersey for a long part of the race, but physiologically, is there any difference?
I think, you know, we've always recognised that the Tour is a three-week race, and you have to play the long game, you have to be patient. Just the nature of the race and the nature of the way others were racing this year meant that, you know, we didn't take the jersey until much later. One of the big things that we've been aware of, and you know, if you remember the first couple of tours that that Chris won, he won on a bit of a fade, really, and so we've since then been really working on keeping the guys as strong as possible in the third week, managing our resources in the first 2 weeks, and making sure they finish really strong. And as you saw today, Egan in particular finished the strongest of everyone in this race.
And not getting sucked in when others are going up the road and gaining time, keeping cool.
Yeah, it's a really hard thing. It requires, especially for a 22-year-old, it's something that requires a bit of maturity and to exercise that patience, to play the long game, to wait for the right moment, to make sure you don't burn any matches unnecessarily. Of course, you have to use energy in the first week of the race, but use that energy as efficiently as possible. But they did. They were fantastic.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's the voice of Seb Piquet, race radio at the Tour de France, to remind us to tell you that this episode is sponsored by the Watt Bike Atom. It's been great to be sponsored by Watt Bike through so much of the Tour de France, and we were able to try out the Watt Bike Atom in June before we came across to, well, Belgium and then France to cover the Tour. What did you think of the Watt Bike Atom, Richard? How did you find it to ride?
Well, good. We've talked a lot about its stability. The data that you get from it, I found very interesting because I use the Watt Bike app with it, which, I can see lots to work on. Even for someone like me who's not a serious cyclist anymore, I can see I can get more enjoyment out of it if I work a little bit on, you know, getting the balance right between my right leg and my left leg and working on my pedaling effectiveness, because you know, just having that in your head when you're riding makes a difference. You're focusing on that, and it's not something we talk about. I'd love to know the pedaling effectiveness of some of the pros. You know, you can tell by watching them, who's a smooth pedaler, the riders that seem to stamp a bit more, the riders who have their heels down, heels up, pedaling with their toes more. But I'd love to know, and you know, maybe it's something worth investigating with some of the people involved with Watt Bike, but I'd love to know how they measure up and whether it's an absolutely essential part of being a good rider, having pedaling effectiveness. And you would imagine it would be, but I'd love to know what the kind of variations are.
The two things that I enjoyed most about the Watt Bike Atom were, first of all, how easy it was to set up. There was no faff whatsoever. You can adjust the handlebars, you can adjust the saddle, you can get your position as close to your road bike as your tape measure will allow, basically, and then it connects up seamlessly to whatever apps you want to use, whether you're using something on your phone or on a computer, whether it be Zwift or Trainer Road or any of the other training apps that you can use. And then because the machine itself is so sturdy, you can really kind of replicate road riding. The contact points, the handlebars, the brake hoods, although of course there's no brakes on it, but the hoods feel like they would on a good quality road bike, as does the saddle. And so really you can create your...
It's a very long way, isn't it, from the exercise bikes you get in the gym with the big wide saddles.
Absolutely. Yeah, it feels like riding a road bike. But with the bonus of not having your road bike on a turbo trainer, not having to set it up, not worrying whether you've got it all lined up properly and wondering what's that kind of clicking noise or whatever, which does occasionally happen when you set your bike up with a turbo trainer. The Watt Bike Atom is a precision piece of kit for a specific job. And if you would like to buy a Watt Bike Atom, you can do so from wattbike.com. And if you buy before the end of July, Watt Bike is offering £100 worth of Sigma Sport vouchers with every Watt Bike Atom purchased. Go to wattbike.com/TCP100 and use the code TCP100 at the checkout to receive that offer. TCP100 is TCP100.
And there's nothing wrong with exercise bikes in the gym if that's your thing. Well, it was interesting to hear from Tim Kerrison and Javier Teches, the other coach there, of course, who he coaches Bernal and the other Spanish speakers. And he gave us an interview earlier in the week where he said that his recovery is his great strength. He has two great strengths. One is the altitude, and Bernal said in his press conference here that really the longer the climb is, the happier he becomes. He doesn't like the lower slopes so much, and as they get higher, he becomes more comfortable. And his recovery has been evident the last few days. And I suspect that had these two stages not been shortened, then we'd be looking at him arriving in Paris or 3 or 4 minute lead.
Yeah, that's certain, you know. But it's the same. Without the stage shortenings, he might have win with 3 minutes, you know, 4 minutes, unless Thibaut Pinot had been at his best. You know, so once again, the only thing we can say is, because you were mentioning Bernal's consistency, but actually Geraint Thomas' consistency was amazing, because he was never any close to win a stage. He was never even in the time trial. Team time trial was great, but not brilliant. They didn't win it. His time trial performance was not exceptional, but he was always there near the top, and consistency has been the rule. It's interesting, you know, what Tim Kerrison said about, and because we had the impression that Team Sky and then Team Ineos were always winning the Tour the same way. Well, this adaptability, you know. Sorry, listeners, if I give the impression I'm sometimes contradicting myself, but you know, sometimes things are complicated. But the sense of adaptation, I think, is a strength that they showed this time, and it's to their credit, undoubtedly.
Just on Bernal and just the extraordinary lack of experience he has at this level. He's only ridden two Grand Tours. He's never ridden the Giro or the Vuelta. Last year's Tour de France was his first Grand Tour, finished 15th, of course. So he's not won a stage of a Grand Tour before this.
Do we even count?
Yeah, well, we technically don't, because no official stage result was issued. Mm. Only times for the general classification. So this will be one of the pub quiz questions, or a question for the Stato.
Which means also that the team has not won a stage, which is quite remarkable. Quite an unusual one in a way, and yet nobody would deny that he's not a deserving winner, that he was the strongest rider in the race. Worth a mention for Jumbo-Visma, though, second podium of the year for them in a Grand Tour. Roglic was third at the Giro. Kruijswijk, who has never finished on the podium of a Grand Tour before, has gone very close. That's a real huge kind of achievement for him. I think he's at the limit of his ability, and I don't see him taking the next step up. But as a team, they've been very impressive, and really it was their work today, Laurens de Ploes, especially after George Bennett peeled off, that did for Alaphilippe and made sure that Kruijswijk was able to get that podium. That will mean a lot to him and to that team, I think.
Absolutely, and they rode really well on a number of the mountain stages, and they've had a great tour across the board. And hearing Geraint Thomas say, you know, they don't go for any of the minor classifications. They're not interested really in anything other than winning the race.
They're not even interested in stage wins. I mean, if we look at the tour this year, they didn't win a stage. I mean, it's intriguing.
Whereas Jumbo-Visma have really come to this tour and tried to get something out of more or less everything. They've won a couple of sprints, they won a team time trial, Wout van Aert won a stage as well, and Kruijswijk is on the podium. I mean, that's really consistent, impressive, across the board success for that team. You just wonder, you know, will the next stage of their development to basically be as single-minded in their focus as Team Ineos have been.
Yeah. Wow. Well, if the rumor that Tom Dumoulin might join them this season or the next is true, then we have a very, very serious threat, I think, for Team Ineos.
I spoke to Team Sunweb the other day, and they're in the dark, I think, about Dumoulin and his intentions. He's under contract to them for another couple of years, so they're not expecting him to move, but these rumors have been circulating a while. Jumbo Supermarkets, the man behind Jumbo Supermarkets, has become very involved in the team. Mm. It's a family-owned business. He has pretty deep pockets, and having Dumoulin for a Dutch team would be very important, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Eike Visbeek of Team Sunweb, the team manager, wouldn't really be drawn on what was going on. He gave the impression that he didn't really know, because he said that all of the talks were being conducted at a much more corporate management level. So there may well be some negotiations going on to wriggle Dumoulin out of his Sunweb contract and get him across to Jumbo-Visma. I mean, he'd be a massive asset for a team that is absolutely Dutch. And just from the Giro, when Roglic was doing so well, we were asking Dutch colleagues, does Roglic count as kind of half Dutch in the kind of media landscape? And really, they were saying that Roglic doesn't, you know, punch a hole in the media in the Netherlands. So Dumoulin to Jumbo-Visma, well, watch this space.
Well, I mean, the other rider who we've been talking about a lot, Julian Alaphilippe, slumped to fifth overall. As you say, if you'd put that to him at the start of the tour, I think he would have been very, very happy. He had 15 days in the yellow jersey and really brought a lot to the race. I spoke to his Belgian teammate Yves Lampaert at the finish just after he'd crossed the line and asked him about Alaphilippe and about their tour. I guess a disappointing end for Julien, but how do you reflect on the Tour de France with him in particular and his performance here?
I think we don't have to be disappointed at all. We did a wonderful Tour de France. We had 15 days yellow, 3 victories. I think to be disappointed is not to the order.
How was he last night?
Oh, he accepted how it was. It was like that, and he knew today it was a really hard climb, and that it would be difficult to keep his place. But he's always optimistic, and he should be proud on the Tour de France that he rode.
How, as a team, did you enjoy having the yellow jersey for so long?
Really, it was. It's only my second Tour de France, but it was by far the most beautiful one. And I think maybe it will be the most beautiful one, because 15 days yellow, 3 stage victories, it was a wonderful tour.
And can Julien come back and try and win it, do you think?
I don't know. I think he should stay focused on stage victories, because that's his strong point. And I don't know, for GC, maybe if it's a bit more easy than this, because this year was really, really much harder than last year.
The cycling podcast at the 2019 Tour de France is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for their support of the cycling podcast, scienceandsport.com. And the code, Lionel, is...
SISCP25.
Not bad. Enter that at the checkout and you will get 25% off all your Science and Sport products. We heard from Yves Lampaert before the break. He was talking about Julien Alaphilippe. You had something to add on that, I think, Francois?
Yeah, just from Geraint Thomas, you know, press conference. And that's what makes Thomas such a likable, person and asks, and it was not by a Frenchman, whether the parkour was the reason why this tour, and maybe we should discuss that maybe tomorrow, the reason why this tour was one of the most exciting, in memory. He said, well, it's not the parkour, it's because of Julian Alaphilippe. So, you know, to have had a guy animating the race day in and day out on top of the you know, uncertainty of the outcome itself, and the variety of the parkour. Yeah, I mean, all these ingredients together are made for an exciting race. And yeah, I mean, tribute. You had to say chapeau to Julian Alaphilippe, because I mean, he finishes fifth, which is amazing. You know, well. We never would have expected that, but on top of that, he was really the animator, the guy who made it exciting from day one.
It was interesting to hear Yves Lampaert say that he doesn't think that Alaphilippe should become a GC rider, and that he should stick to what he's good at, which is one day races, week long stages. So I thought that was really interesting. Lampaert is, I like Yves Lampaert. He always
what do you think
gives
about
you a thoughtful. I think it's going to be difficult for him, having had the tour that he's had, not to succumb to the pressure of making the Tour de France the main focus of his season. That's going to be tricky, because he'll be offered a lot of money as well to be that rider.
I mean, in future, the courses are going to be absolutely critical to Alaphilippe's hopes, aren't they? I mean, next year we start down in Nice, and we'll be going over the Col de Torini, the Col d'Aise on the opening weekend. It gives the impression that, you know, Alaphilippe could find himself in the same sort of position early in the race as he was this year. I mean, that's going to be the thing that really determines.
I don't think Christian Prudhomme's going to react. I'm going to say something else, but too drastically or radically to the terrible weather that we've had here, which have really ruined these very important alpine stages. But someone on Twitter sent me a tweet suggesting that, sort of harking back to the interview that Christian Prudhomme gave us for our episode of Climb Zero about La Planche des Belles-Filles, where he said there were lots of other climbs in the Vosges area and perhaps the Jura as well, not quite so high, which he would like to use. And it sets up the possibility of a Tour de France where the final mountain range might not be the Alps or the Pyrenees, but the medium mountains in the Vosges and the Jura, where the weather would be less of a factor, you would imagine, and they might suit a rider of slightly different abilities, and especially if this is the Bernal era, where perhaps the high altitude tour will be something they come to avoid in order not to make it too easy for him.
Yeah, it would be interesting, just because maybe since Desgranges first took the peloton to the Alps and the Pyrenees, the race has been held hostage by these two mountains, you know, and I'm sure every tour organizer would love to kind of break the deadlock of these mountains. You have to go to the Alps, you have to go to the Pyrenees, which means you can't radically change the course, and that would be interesting.
Lionel, is it that time for your regular feature?
Stitched up. I mean, that's like,
where is it? We didn't even mention it last night.
Well, we didn't, because, well, no one knew where the team buses were, half of them, at 6 o'clock.
There was
in the
a little
evening.
Bit of disappointment that there wasn't more discussion last night as well of my... There was so much going on yesterday, but there was no discussion of my helicopter ride.
Did you have to use a sick bag, Richard?
No, Lionel, I did not. I was fine.
Just explain what you were doing, why you were in a helicopter.
Well, it was courtesy of Skoda, who, as you know, they sponsor the cycling podcast Femina. They sponsored us through the women's tour until the end of the year, as they did last year. They've given us a lovely car for this race, for the tour. They offered us a couple of spots in the helicopters, because they take guests up every day in helicopters. We decided to take one of the spots and offer the other one as a prize, which we, for a competition that we ran at the women's tour, we ran a competition to guess the winner of stage one while stage one was on. The winner was a chap called Stephen D'Souza. Lots of people actually guessed correctly the winner. It was Yolande Dour. Stephen was the name we picked out the hat. So Stephen D'Souza, who's a podcast listener, actually organized a family holiday around this prize, and so he joined us for the day. We spent the day with Tim Harris, drove 25 kilometers in the car, watched the race by the roadside, went up in the helicopters for 40 kilometers. We were 200 meters above the race. The TV helicopters are 50 meters above the race. So, you know, we could just see groups spread around the road, and it was very difficult to know actually what was going on in the race. But obviously it was a stunning experience, the majestic Alps all around us. It was great. Quite windy up there, you know, and their helicopters aren't that robust. They do get buffeted around a bit, but we got dropped off further down the road, got picked up by Tim Harris there and taken for a very delicious picnic.
Nice.
And that was all happening in glorious weather. We got back in the car, a few raindrops fell, and then within minutes the sky had darkened and these hailstones were falling on us. It was an unbelievable transformation. All that time we were watching the race climb up the other side of the mountain in perfectly fine weather. So, and a fascinating day. I think Stephen, our competition winner, had a great day out. I hope he did, at least.
Good.
We were making fun of you before your helicopter ride about the perils of, you know, being on a helicopter and every chance you had of you know, ending badly. But little did we know that you would end up in a landslide.
I know. It was far more dangerous in the car. In fact, I felt far more at risk in the car than I did in the helicopter. I was glad I wasn't in the helicopter in those hailstones, mind you.
Anyway, outside the team bus has had a bit of a Thibaut Pinot of a tour, fallen apart slightly in the final week.
Disappointing, that, isn't it?
I know.
I've been asking for it.
I did well to keep the plate spinning for as long as I did. It's not over yet. We've still got Paris tomorrow. I think I've got a small handful of teams that I need to
get. There's always Paris.
But I want to just go back and make my Mike Tournison Jumbo-Visma chat from week one an unofficial outside the team bus. So that just makes my task in Paris a little bit simpler. I think I've got four teams to speak to tomorrow after the finish. I'm going to, maybe I might have to bribe Francois to help me out with a couple.
Why not? But my take on it is that maybe next year you should be doing outside the team hotel, because at least hotels don't move, you know.
True.
This is true. But you did speak to somebody not outside the team bus.
I did.
A friend of the podcast, Marco Haller. We talk a lot about friends of the podcast. If you're signed up as a friend of the podcast, or if you still do sign up as a friend of the podcast, you can hear the Revenants. Really intimate sort of audio diary kept by Marco Haller and also Bernie Eisel, in collaboration with Daniel Freeb, about their return, their recovery from very serious injuries last year. It's a great listen, thoroughly recommended.
Well, yeah, I was up at the finish line, as you were, Richard, and as Marco Haller came in, he stopped just next to me, so I thought, well, I'll ask him a few questions about how he feels about finishing the Tour de France.
I'm just wondering what your emotions are knowing that you're going to finish the Tour de France.
Once again, it has taught me that it's the biggest bike race in the world, and finishing in is obviously something great. I mean, I need to be honest and say I was hoping to be more active in the race and, yeah, to try something, to show something. Obviously, it was not possible. Whatever the reason is, it was a long season already. If I'm right, tomorrow will be my 18th race day, so nobody has raced this much an entire pro peloton. But at the moment, I'm just happy and satisfied being again able to finish the hardest and most prestigious bike race, and I really will enjoy the Champs-Élysées tomorrow.
Have you had some difficult moments during the race?
I was pretty lucky that I never had a really black day, but I rather have had two very good days and two very bad days than always average. But it is how it is, but I will still enjoy tomorrow. And
do you feel like you'll have a lighter race program between now and the end of the year? And do you feel that the Tour has given you a building block to getting back towards your pre-injury best?
I actually think that every Grand Tour you will finish, and I also did the Giro this year, is a kind of base you put in. We will see how it will unfold for the rest of the year. We are pretty short on riders, so I still will have to race a lot. It's already the next weekend where we'll have to line up in London. I was actually looking forward to a break, but we give this break to Nils Pollitt, who became a father, so I think that's just fair. After that, I will take certainly 1 or 2 weeks easy, and then I will probably try again to peak towards the Worlds, because English crowds are always very, very nice to race with. We will see how it unfolds.
Lastly, any chance to stay in London a few days and catch Arsenal play?
Not this time, but I certainly will consider it again. Although I need to say I'm not a big fan of the Emirates. I'd rather travel abroad to watch them away from home. Like always, following the Arsenal very, very close. And being an Arsenal fan is almost as hard as being a bike rider.
Well, they play my team, Watford, on the last day of the Vuelta. Right. So if you're not riding the Vuelta and you want to come, let me know.
Good, we can maybe find an opportunity, yeah.
So, as Marco Haller said there, he will do his 80th race of the season tomorrow on the Champs-Élysées, more than any other World Tour rider this season. Quite remarkable considering the injuries that he's come back from. Hopefully he'll get a slightly lighter race programme for the end of the season. But, very interesting guy. And if he wants to come to see Watford against Arsenal at some point, then, yeah, we'll try and arrange tickets for him.
Great. Well, at the finish, I spoke to another rider who we spoke to much earlier in the race. He was an outside the team bus, actually, Zandro Maurice, a rider we didn't know an awful lot about. Belgian rider on Wanty Group Gobert, who really impressed in some of the early stages, getting up there in the top 10. And then as the race wore on, found himself in the top 20, which I think everybody, including he, were surprised by. He had a bad couple of days in the Alps, and he was very keen to finish in the top 20. After he finished, he was asking the team's press officer whether he'd done enough to finish in the top 20. As you'll hear, he wasn't quite there. He finished 21st in the end, but here's what he said at the finish. You've ridden it very well, this tour. You must be pleased.
I had a bad moment at the beginning of the climb. And after I found a good pace, and I just tried to keep this because we passed Bennett. So I don't know if I enter just 20 or not in the GC.
What would it mean to you to finish in the top 20?
I give everything until the end, and I'm happy with my tour. I did three top 10 places, and I'm a little bit disappointed also because the last 4 days my back was really, really bad, and that cost me for sure my top 20 place. So I'm a little bit disappointed, but it's like this, and it's a tour, you cannot change it. So
yeah, I mean, what were your expectations coming into the tour?
Nothing. I just say I take day by day, and I take everything I can take. So I take three top 10 places, one time 11. So until 3 or 4 days before the end of the tour, I was 13 in GC, so I didn't expect it before the tour. So it's my first Grand Tour, and I'm not a real, real climber. So I think I did it very well. I'm happy it's finished, and one more day to go tomorrow in Paris, and then it's finished.
What have you learned about yourself in your first 3 week race?
I learned a lot. I give a lot in the first 10 days. Yeah, the second week I felt it, and okay, Alaphilippe gave also everything in the first week, but he's from another level than me, so I try to maybe next year I can come back with some more experience, and yes.
Well, that was Andrew Maurice, 21st, and I think lots to reflect on for him. 32 years old and his first Grand Tour, and he's ridden very well. Just before we go tonight, we're still running the competition to win the Austin Cycles Atto carbon fibre folding bike worth £2,775. I've been riding it here at the Tour. We'll be giving it away as a prize. To enter, sign up to our newsletter at thecyclingpodcast.com, and when you get the newsletter, you can click through to the Austin Cycles website where you can tell us why you should win it. You can still enter this competition, so please do, and the newsletters of course carry on beyond the Tour de France, so please do sign up for our newsletter. One or two little entries here. Sam Kate says, I'm off to Afghanistan with the army soon, and it'd be perfect to be able to fold up and take with me to poodle about the camp there and then use for my commute to the MOD when I get back 6 months later. Well, we'll consider that, Sam. Gordon Booth, two entries from him, both of them worth reading out. When the Lionel Flanders does his bit outside the team bus is a big hit, but the buff only moans. It's rubbish, he groans. And Francois just thinks it's bullshit. Also from Gordon Booth, Lionel loves food, don't forget. The press buffet he hasn't missed yet. But his jaw really dropped the moment he copped that the chef only served andouillette.
Oh, that's good. Good.
Fantastic entries there, Gordon. Well done. What a talented chap. Anyway, thanks very much. That's all for tonight. We'll be podcasting from Paris tomorrow, won't we?
We will. We've got a very long drive tomorrow from here in the Alps up to Paris. The stage, fortunately, doesn't start until 6:05 in the evening, and we'll finish at twilight, I guess. The sun will be setting at sort of 9:30-ish, and we'll be around the team buses. It's almost an entire episode outside the team bus.
Outside the team buses special. Well, before we go, a few thanks to friends of the podcast. Thank you very much indeed to Rachel McGrath, Eriend Almersvold Rust, sorry if I've got that wrong, Josephine Bowman, Jackie Knoll, Finbar O'Halloran, and Michael Buckley.
And then a grand merci to Lauren Thraves, John Ferguson, Liam Green, Finlay Gall, and Alex Smith.
And a big thank you to Peter Rutherford, William Goddard, Simon Rigby, Stuart Lang, Kevin O'Hagan, and Nick Dunton.
Thank you all, and thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
Thank you, Richard.